For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey gang, what's going on? Kevin Goatee here, gutting the sacred cow. We have ourselves a kid sports movie, major sports movie, The Mighty Ducks, the film that launched a goddamn NHL franchise. Before we get to that, please don't forget, leave us a 5-star rating, 2-sentence review on the podcast platform of your choice. GuttingTheSacredCow.com every single day. We've got new articles for you. List of 10 sequels we wanted to see, sequels we never asked for. And of course, movie news and a bunch of other stuff. You know the drill. GuttingTheSacredCow.com as well as GTSC Podcast on Twitter. Give us a follow. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Give us a follow. Tell your friends about us. Any of your movie friends, you should just share the word. That's really cool of you to do that. And listen, without further ado, here's J.D. Duran doing The Mighty Ducks. Thanks a lot, guys. Love you.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kinda like it, yeah.
Sai Anara. Boom. Kevin Israel, name that film.
You got me.
I keep stumping you. Con Air. Cyrus the Virus. Sai Anara.
Oh, boom. Jesus.
You're going to Jesus Con Air? Oh, boy. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, back gutting the sacred cow. Here we are yet again, folks. First and foremost, thank you for tuning in and downloading this podcast. Now, pause. I want you to go and give us a 5-star rating and a 2 or 3 sentence review right now. Pause the podcast. We'll wait for you. Ready? This helps. Believe me, it helps. Thank you so much for doing that. And if you're looking
at homework, we're giving them homework.
I know that. We don't ask much.
No, not much at all.
Except for going to guttingthesacredcow.com every day, because there you find the best articles every day, Monday through Friday. Kevin and I have new articles. Top list, hashtag list of 10, movie news, sequels we want to see, sequels we did not want to see, things of that nature all across the world. Go see guttingthesacredcow.com. Check that out. And if you want to advertise with us, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. But before we get into it, and we want to thank everyone again for listening. You've been an absolute joy and a delight. Thank you for tagging us on Twitter and resharing. That's a huge help right now. And there's goes with the dog voicing his displeasure probably at the film that our guest JD has chosen from In Session Film. JD, how are you? What's going on?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here. This is a very unique show, a very unique premise, and we're going to have fun tonight, or at least I'm going to. I've been wanting to be cathartic with this film for some time, and this is the perfect outlet for that.
You see that, Kevin Israel? This guest knows how to start off a show right. He pays us compliments and says, you guys are original, unlike most of those hacks out there in the podcast arena.
I think we can end the show right now.
Yeah, this is it. You win. JD's got the sacred cow.
JD, just say a couple more things and we'll sign off.
JD Duran has chosen the 1992 kid classic, The Mighty Ducks.
I have. Bucks.
Yeah. 1992, a budget at the time of $10 million, a $50 million gross for that film. Translate that to 2020 dollars, $18.6 million budget, $93.1 million haul. Not the crazy money Disney is used to, but when you get a 5X plus ROI, I call that a win in my book.
When a movie ends up creating a hockey team, I think they did all right.
I think they did all right as well.
Yeah.
Kevin Israel, next, of course, how did the film do with everybody? IMDb, as we all know, is a scale of 1 to 10 with decimal points. I'll let you go first this time. What did the Mighty Ducks score on the IMDb scale?
I feel like this is going to be high. I'm going to say an 8-1.
J.D. Duran, what did the Mighty Ducks score on IMDb?
That's a very good guess. Yeah, I'll go 8-4.
Oof. Both of you are paying retail for what you could have gotten for wholesale.
Wow.
6.5.
I'm honestly shocked by that. Yeah.
Me too.
Critics, Rotten Tomatoes, as we know, is a 1 through 100 percentage game. Kevin Israel, actually, no, sorry. J.D. Duran, we'll let you go first. What did the critics give the Mighty Ducks?
I don't think it was all that well reviewed critically. I'm going to say 62%.
Kevin Israel.
Being generous.
54.
23%. Don Mattingly's jersey number. Or Michael Jordan, but I say Don Mattingly because I'm a hard Yankee fan. Audience score. Kevin Israel, what did the audience think of the Mighty Ducks?
66.
J.D.?
Yeah, if that IMDb score is any indication, 66 is probably about right. So I'll go 61.
Kevin Israel, you overbid by the slightest. 65%.
Oh, nice. I did that last good episode, call. Too. It was off you by did. One.
Yeah.
Good work.
The critics hate it. The audience thought, not bad. It's fine.
But how much of that voting is done by adults versus children who see it and the film is obviously made for them or pandered to them?
JD, I don't know many kid film critics, but I sure as fuck don't want to read their articles. How about that?
Which is fair. I'm just saying.
I like this movie. My dad bought me popcorn and Sour Patch Kids. It's great.
I'm just saying, if we poll children who see it, I'm guessing there's a disparity there between those numbers you read off.
Hey, Kevin, by the way, that review you just strung together as a child is better than some of the Amazon reviews you pull out. So.
I'm going to tease ahead for a hot second. What if I were to tell you that the Amazon reviews were worse in the sense of, like, not as entertaining as the critics' one-star reviews?
Wow.
A
okay.
First for this podcast. Quotes. Cake eater.
Yeah, classic. Yeah.
And quack, quack. Kevin Israel, your quotes.
You took my cake eater. What did they ever explain what that was in the movie?
I have an answer what it is, but they did not explain it in the theater.
What is it?
In Minnesota, they actually call people, they are so rich, they're able to eat their have their cake and eat it too. That's what that means.
I thought it had something to do with that, but it's a local. That without any... I thought it was a racist. I thought it was something like black kids in Minnesota call white kids.
Cake eater?
Yeah, because the other line that got me, and I was just shocked to hear it, was, what is this, an Oreo sandwich?
The Oreo line.
And I was like, wow, that would have not made it past anything today. Like, that was shocking.
Yeah.
Maybe in hockey today, but the NBA, it is a chocolate chip ice cream in the NBA.
And the only other one was, keep swinging. Maybe it'll give him a cold.
Oh.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
JD, what quotes stick out at you?
Well, you guys pretty much nailed all the good ones. I don't know if I have a particular quote. I mean, there are some bad ones in here. I guess the one that always comes to mind, the nostalgic one, is one early on where he's going, swing, bada, 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 swing, bada, swing, bada. And then, of course, it turns into, hey, goalie, 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 hey, goalie, goalie. That's the nostalgia one that always comes to mind when I think of this film.
You know, it's funny. I thought that quote was from the K7 song, Swing, bada, 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 swing. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come. It's on my iPhone. I have no problem playing this at any time. Five fun facts.
Five fun facts. Five fun facts for you right now. It's time for five fun more facts. Five fun facts for you right now.
Five fun facts sponsored to you by guttingthesacredcow.com merch site. That's right. Take a pic with you wearing our merch, and we will gladly put you on our social media. That's guttingthesacredcow.com. Five fun facts. Want to take a stab who turned the roll down of Gordon Bombay, Kevin Israel?
I feel like it's going to be like Charlie Sheen or something.
Bingo!
Nice.
Who else was considered for the role? Bill Murray, along with Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, and Michael J. Fox, who ironically played hockey until he started shaking like a leaf in a wind.
I could have seen any of those people doing the sport.
Two, one, I would say for sure A-list and maybe even B-lister, a second B-lister, auditioned for Charlie Conway. Want to take a guess who the A-lister who auditioned for Charlie Conway was? A-lister now, obviously.
DiCaprio.
Bingo. Great guess. Want to take a stab and try and guess who the second B level? I mean, I don't even say B. I'd say A minus to be completely fair with you. A minus, B plus.
I think I wore myself out, DiCaprio.
You blew your load. You're just going to walk out a winner. It's like you're up $2,000 at the craps table. Fuck, I'm going to bed, baby. That's it.
I'm going to bed. Two, and we got compliments. This is a good night.
Yeah.
Answer your question, Jake Gyllenhaal. But he's not an A-lister. Jake is not. No, he's not an A-lister.
Oh, I would debate that.
Do you think, okay, if DiCaprio is an A-lister, then you tell me how Jake Gyllenhaal is in the same breath that DiCaprio is.
Because what are you going below A? He's not a B-lister.
Well, what's below an A?
I don't know. But
that's why I said A minus. A minus plus. His parents, Jake Gyllenhaal's parents, would not let him take the role. Fun fact. He auditioned, but he didn't take the role. The first kid who played Adam Banks, the guy who went from the Hawks to the Ducks, the first actor who played him was sent home for bullying the other actors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Scandal on the set of the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
How cold does it get in Minnesota? When it was 55 degrees below zero, a kissing scene with Emilio Estevez and Heidi Klum had it happen where their lips froze together and a makeup person had to pour warm water on their lips to unstick them. Good thing this was not a blowjob scene in the back of an alley.
Okay, yes.
The kids all had to go to a skating and hockey boot camp because they all lied when interviewed when they said they knew how to play hockey.
Why didn't they get the role? Classic Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. although I do voiceover, and I got an email today going, hey, send your audition in to do a Klingon. I go, nope, delete. Not even a try.
Jim Jeffries has a really funny bit about he had that TV show where he had the handicapped friend that they helped. I can't remember the name of the show.
I saw it. I used to watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty good, but that was true. He actually did have this handicapped friend. And when they were auditioning for handicapped people, they said, the producer said, we want to get a real handicapped person. And his whole story is about how everybody who showed up lied about being handicapped.
And then who did they book?
You're going to hell.
Who did they book? Do you know who they booked for that? DJ Qualls, the nerd from Road Trip.
Who looks like he's handicapped.
He has one of the biggest noses I've ever seen on a man period, next to Pinocchio. And another fun – actually, because I listened to Jeffries, that's on his first album, the whole story about him going to the whore and all that. He just took that whole thing and made it a sitcom, if you didn't know that. But we didn't give a fuck about Jim Jeffries. No one does, especially now his blowhardy Netflix specials. That's for damn sure. We came here to allow J.D. Duran to gut the sacred cow.
Go for it, JD.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the Mighty Ducks, and I wanted to do this because obviously Disney recently announced they are going to reboot this franchise. And I have some pretty conflicted feelings on it. And I brought up earlier that if we were to poll young kids who see this, I do think there would be a massive disparity, because I remember as a kid watching this and liking it and all of my friends loving it. And I do think that's indicative of the social media discourse among at least people my age who grew up with this film. When it was announced they were doing it, everyone seemed to be excited for that. And I certainly was not. I was on the other end of that coin there. Because I grew up playing hockey, so this is going to be a bit of a biased review. And with that, coming with that, I have to appreciate this film, because it did put hockey on the map in a way that the sport itself didn't really do, at least broadly speaking, within the zeitgeist at that time. It really blew up the sport and put it into the mainstream in a way that we hadn't really seen up until that point. So I will always appreciate the film for that. And as you guys mentioned earlier, it launched a literal franchise in Anaheim. And what other movie can say that? Really none. If anything, you know, maybe one of the recent films from the early 2000s inspired the Kraken name out in Seattle, but you know, that's another conversation for another time. But this sparked a literal franchise. And when it comes to the film, it treats the sport it's depicting like a joke. And I know it's a kid's film. Its silliness and humor is meant to pander to young kids. I certainly understand that. But its approach toward that demographic and its reverence toward the sport of hockey doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. And I feel that it is, and in a very, very big way. The film isn't in any way honoring the sport that it's depicting. In fact, it goes out of its way to undermine the credibility of the sport. The Flying V, the knuckle puck are the most infamous, but it's also things like the Statue of Liberty play or the countless other gimmicks that turn the game into a circus, which I think is unfortunate because it's one of the most sophisticated and skilled sports you can play. I was six or seven when this film came out. I loathed the film then because of that. And as an adult rewatching it now, I still feel the same way. If anything, my anger toward that has only amplified. And in the first film, I guess to be fair to it, it's probably the best there. It gets way worse as the franchise goes on. D2 is even more of a joke. But I don't think this first film does it all that well either. And on top of that, the dialogue here is clunky at times. It's narratively very, very trite. The choreography of the hockey itself is really bad. Really, really embarrassingly bad. And don't even get me started on the small details. There are so many small things that the film overlooks, such as offsides. How many times, I counted a dozen times, kids are just offsides and the film just doesn't care. I will say, though, I'll give the film credit during its Flying V sequence, which in later sequels, the Flying V is offsides almost every time. And again, not honoring the sport, it's a bullshit play that would never work. But it's a kid's film, whatever. They at least get the offsides part right during that scene. So I'll at least give them credit because they missed it like 10 other times earlier in the film. But the choreography of the hockey is really bad. Goldberg is a goalie who doesn't want to be hit by the puck, and that drives me up a wall maybe the most. And again, I am coming at this bias. Not only was I grew up playing hockey, I grew up playing goalie. And I don't know a single kid at that time, as early as I started playing goalie, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years old. I never had a single friend of mine who played that position that was like, oh my God, I'm scared to get hit by the puck. No, fuck that. Like, you put on the pads for a reason. Like, you want to play that position for a reason. You choose that. And this film, again, goes out of its way to and gives the audience a middle finger toward, you know, the game and players that want to play that position. And it's not just Goldberg. Every other goalie in this film reacts that same way. Even when the Mighty Ducks are becoming more formidable, and was it the Fulton character has his shot and he's this intimidating presence or whatever. And yet we have goalies that are just getting out of the way because plot convenience, I guess. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. Because the one thing I will give the film is I do think it has heart that is genuine. I revisited the film, obviously, for this conversation with you guys. And so you have these two characters who are fatherless, who come together and effectively create their own father-son dynamic. And on paper, I think that's great. And I do think there's heart in here. I think the best scenes in this film are the flashbacks to Gordon when he's a little kid and he's coping with the guilt or the grief, excuse me, that he's still reeling from from his father passing away, because that's so intimately connected to the hockey he has as a child. That is great. And honestly, I was very moved by that this time around watching it on this side of fatherhood. But that's also maybe 2 minutes dedicated to this film. And as much as I adore those ideas, I don't know if they're fully realized. And so I would also criticize the film for that. I feel like it could have done more with that relationship, you know, Gordon dealing with his grief, and how that intersects with, you know, these kids that he's trying to teach, and ultimately the redemption that he's seeking at the end of the film. And so he's a coach that, and I get it, it's here for dramatic effect, it's here for irony, you know, whatever. There has to be an arc to the main character. But you have a coach teaching kids how to cheat, to flop for penalties or whatever the hell that was. I mean, that even wasn't even fully explained all that well. And I'm clutching onto something as hard as I can so I'm not crushing my TV when that comes on the screen. It's so infuriating because there is a great premise here that the film, in my opinion, just completely wastes and throws away for a cheap laugh here and there, a few cheap thrills. And I don't know. For me, it's all fake. It's all manufactured. It's all horseshit. And I know this is a film that many people my age that grew up with this, they revere it. They like it. There's a good nostalgia there. I'm happy for them. Hopefully the reboot is better. Hopefully they are listening to this and will learn from the horseshit mistakes that film made. Because it's all of the hockey. And there's a lot of hockey. It's 80% of the film, either on ice or even when they're in the streets, they're skating, doing other things. At one point, Fulton shoots a puck into a goddamn van. You know, so like, there's a lot of hockey here, and a lot of it is treated with no honor whatsoever. It's two middle fingers to the game. Whatever, fuck, we're Disney. We're just here to make money.
Was just in Disney World in November. Guess what I didn't see? A Gordon Bombay character walking around high-fiving people.
Exactly.
Wait, so Katie, since you have I'm sorry to interrupt, but since you have an actual real knowledge of hockey, the one hockey-based question that I had in the movie, at the end when he has the shot, takes the penalty shot, he doesn't have a helmet on.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah, he wouldn't even be allowed. He wouldn't even be allowed on the ice without the helmet. Like when I was saying that there are a lot of little details this film overlooks, that's easily one of them. Yeah, no, he has to have a helmet.
But to be fair, in 1992, they still NHL did not make that mandatory. The last player to wear, you're a hockey guy. I used to be a huge hockey guy, not as much anymore. Last player to not wear a helmet in the NHL. Do you know this one, JD?
I don't know if I know it.
Craig McTavish, ex-Ranger, oh, okay. And a bunch of other people. So yeah. NHLers weren't wearing helmets on the ice still. Some chose not to, but most of them did. But it wasn't mandatory until, I think, after the 94 season.
But at the Pee Wee level, it would have been.
I'm sure it would have been, of course. Yeah. Of course. Kevin Israel, I'm going to go first with my notes, if you don't mind.
Have at it.
And these notes, of course, sponsored by guttingthesacredcow.com and the merch store there. Emilio Estevez knocking back bottles minutes after work results is the fastest DWI that would even make Charlie Sheen say, holy shit, that's fast. What was the reason?
Can I interrupt you for a sec?
Yes.
I hate repeating the same notes. That was the stupidest DUI scene I've ever seen.
Wasn't it ever?
Oh, it was just like, let's show that he gets drunk and dry. Like, who gets into a Corvette when there's ice on the ground with a bottle and just starts skidding all, like,
fishtailing in the icy streets of Minneapolis?
Absurd.
I've never driven drunk, but I hear that you're typically probably as careful as possible when you're driving drunk. Like, you have to be hammered beyond belief to be that level of an asshole.
Yeah, he must have been knocking bottles back since 12:30 to have that kind of driving. Because when I used to drive drunk, it's like hands on the wheel like this, going 10 miles an hour slower and making sure I stay on that right side of the lane. Number two, what was the research Emilio Estevez did for this role? Carlos, he calls it. Carlos, yeah, I know you're going by Charlie right now, but that's your real name. Like, mine's Emilio, so cut the shit, Carlos. Anyway, how much does Heidi Fleiss charge for a midget with double Ds? Send one over tomorrow and call my early birthday present. Okay, sorry, getting off topic. What was it like getting DWI there, Charlie? Hold on, let me grab my tape recorder. Okay, click, start talking. Emilio walks away and has sex with Paula Abdul while Charlie Sheen speaks on the phone and gives all his tales of getting pulled over by the cops. I saw Jussie Smollett's name in the credits and spent the entire film wondering when two Nigerians would come on the ice and fake beat him up as there as well. Don't Jesus me, Kevin. You thought the same fucking thing.
I know. I didn't see his name in the credits.
I did. It jumped. I go, holy shit, really?
Is he in there?
Yes. He's one of the Oreo, the black guy, the Oreo line, as they called it.
Oh, yeah. You almost said he's one of the Oreo kids.
Yeah. The Oreo line.
That's right. What a terrible person.
I forgot how annoying the Rob Schneider Copymeister bit was until that one Jewish kid decided to fire those duds out. Yuck.
So again, don't want to repeat a point because I had that down too. He was doing that character, right?
Yes. That was exactly that same time in SNL when he was doing that in SNL.
They couldn't come up with that's lazy writing.
They
couldn't come up with some kid to be. Kids are plenty annoying without having to do that. And every time he did it, I was like, are they just, like, they're not even going to acknowledge that that's an SNL skit? Like, did it just make it out like that's it? Thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. Continue, guys.
As much as Kevin Israel loves to call me a member of the Hitler Youth, I would orchestrate a better attack than three dudes on rollerblades in an alleyway.
Yeah.
I saw that moment. I saw that scene and go, he's going to say something. I'm going to cut him off on the pass with this joke. Thank you. Wouldn't it be great if the owner of that the hockey shop took a hockey stick and sliced one of the kids off after they made a mess in that store and then stood over their corpse and said, diplomatic immunity.
Was that him?
Yes! How do you not recognize that that's the same South African guy from Lethal Weapon 2? I gave you credit, Kevin Israel. Shame on you. Shame.
Was he that much older?
Yes.
Wow.
God damn it. I am deeply disappointed in you. That was an easy... I said he's going to do the Lethal Weapon 2 joke. I'm going to go first so I can get that one in first.
You got it. Kudos to you.
If anything ever puts a smile on my face, it's a 90s shopping montage.
Oh, God.
Bonus points. Bonus points if the song being played is Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves.
Yeah.
I love to interview the writer and ask why he gave the whitest kid, who is damn near a fucking albino, why is he wearing a kufi?
That's a good question.
Did the three black people at the time in Minnesota, being Kevin Garnett, Kirby Puckett, and Prince, co-sign on a hat primarily worn by black guys, but a kid gets to wear it in a Disney film whose name is probably Bjorn Magnuson? Fulton, the kid who looks like every kid who smelled like sour milk and broken dreams in your elementary school, has the accuracy of a Dr. Fauci first pitch.
Too soon.
Not soon enough. Boy. Fuck that.
That's Kevin's 17th joke since Dr. Fauci threw out the pitch.
Oh, really?
Third. And the first two are gems, goddammit. Averman or Goldberg? Who is the more annoying character? I'll leave that to the group chat to decide. I've never seen...
He's fat, get it? He's fat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although Averman with his hacky fucking cliches of...
No, he's much SNL. 100%.
I used to quote SNL things at school too, so I can't beat myself up too hard.
And you guess what, Kim?
I know.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone get fired and then make animal sounds at their former boss like that.
Quack.
I guess the days of calling your boss a cunt-faced dildo gargler are the days of yore. By the way, in 1992, quacking at your principal gets you detention. 2020, throwing a chair at your teacher doesn't even get you a stern warning anymore. Maybe bringing a gun into school gets you extra homework these days.
Oh, man. Wow.
I just call it how it is, folks. Everyone ducking out of the way and the puck ripping the net are probably the two silliest moments I've ever seen in sports films, and leads the league in the "that doesn't happen" moment. I've been
100%. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cake eater is actually a term used by Minnesota kids, as I said before, which means even their insults are so gosh darn cute. Let's add the goal scored by the girl with the spitting pirouette by the token female hockey player to set women's rights back 30 years.
Oh, so bad.
And you said, JD, you son of a bitch, for all of you non-hockey fans, the Flying V is the biggest horse shit play ever because it's offsides every fucking time.
Yeah.
Final score, 2.5 out of 10. This film stinks. This film is the reason for kids' sports films, which not all of them were bad. I said before we started up, Rookie of the Year, bad. Little Big League, great. Little Giants, not good. But this is the film that opened the door, A, for an NHL franchise, as you aptly have put, but B, the kids' sports films in the 90s, which caused way more awful entries into that genre than good. This film, again, as you said, it's a kid's film. I get it, but goddamn, as a kid, I was like, ah, ready? It's fine. As an adult, it's not fine. This is bad. The sports aspect, as you said, a million flaws. The characters you just don't care about. You get more angry at them. Emilio Estevez is a paint-by-numbers. Oh, let's get him drunk and get WI. Oh, let's let him coach. Oh, let's have a moment of catharsis with his former coach. Oh, and then there's some pathos with the coach, and then there's some with the owner of the law firm, and quack, quack, quack. Now I've come full circle. And guess what? As I don't know how old he said he was, but in the very end, he goes, I'm going to go try out and be for the juniors. You couldn't have realized that years ago instead of dumping how many thousands of dollars in the law school. Hey, I'm pretty good. Yeah. I just missed it up by a quarter of an inch, but I just missed the final shot. You know what? Nah, fuck it. I'm going to go undertake a, what is it, 6-year process, Kevin Israel, of law school? And then how many hours of working a week, 80 hours plus, three. Missing lives and weekends? Three. What's that? Yeah. Three? Oh, three. Four plus the three. Sorry, I should have clarified. Four of college, three after that, so seven total. You're going to give your life up for that because you missed one penalty shot by a quarter of an inch. That means you're a quitter, and this does not happen. This film's terrible. 2.5 out of 10. And I give that half point just so I could say, diplomatic immunity. Lethal Weapon 2, one of the greatest sequels ever made. I'll fucking fight you where you stand.
Okay.
All right, well... So after that, I've never seen this movie before. This came out. So thank you for making me watch it.
You're welcome.
I came out when I was a sophomore in high school, which was pretty much after my window. I'm not exactly sure why Kev was watching it, but that's something we'll talk about at another time.
I have a younger brother and a younger sister. I already told you that I go to the film movies to see them with them.
But anyway, obviously I knew that it was out there and I just never seen it. So the funny thing was, and Kevin and I were talking this before JD came on, I watched this and I was like, wow, this is a knockoff of every kid's sports movie. Like, we've seen this movie 100 times mm-hmm. in all different forms. But in the end, Kev's right. This actually might have been the one to kind of set the stage to lead into a lot of what were much better kids' sports movies. Kev really broke it down a lot of the big issues with the movie, the drunk driving scene, the Oreo thing. Yeah. There's a scene where Emilio Estevez pops a Tylenol. I think he's got a headache watching the show, watching the game, and he takes a. And it's one of the things in movies that I hate. Nobody takes pills dry. Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody does it. Maybe Navy SEALs, but at least he didn't chew it. But I've tried pilling dry, and it's nearly impossible, and you end up coughing it up.
Oh, so yeah, 100%.
That immediately, I was just immediately like, all right, that's bullshit. A great point about this movie to me felt like a cartoon that they made into real life. Nothing in it was realistic. And our last episode, we did Ace Ventura, and my problem with Ace Ventura was Ace Ventura is like a cartoon character existing in the real world. This whole world is cartoon. The whole thing is really, he drives a limo out onto the ice. That's bananas to me. There was no way that would happen. And the most real thing was the mother getting pissed off at him for doing it. Him just being like, I just know. Shut the fuck up.
I know.
And by the way, and I don't care whether you're in Minnesota or New Jersey, when the winters got cold, there were always cops around bodies of water to make sure kids weren't going out on them. So he sure as hell wasn't driving a Cadillac limo out onto a lake. The whole movie just had a ridiculous feel to it. And it was such lazy writing. Everything they did, every time they introduced new characters, it was lazy. They introduced the brother and sister figure skaters, and it was just like, they're figure skaters. Want to play hockey? We're playing hockey, and we're great. Like, that was it. They did no character development, no backstory, no later story. That was all you got.
Sorry to interrupt. And as we all know, figure skaters, massively solid at athletic events like Brian Boitano all those other guys. I'm sure they can fake out two defensemen trying to, pierce, the neutral zone with a good pass and all that, as well as delivering a crushing check against the boards. Right? Wrong.
Right. Yeah. And then the big kid who ends up being the strong slap shot, whose name is eluding me. Who's he?
He's just,
what's that?
Fulton, which is called mullet face. How about that? Yeah. It's easier.
He's just, that character was in literally every kid's sports movie.
Yes.
There's always a kid who looks a little older, who's stronger, and it's like, we got to get him on the team, but he's a badass. But they did absolutely nothing with him. You didn't learn anything about him. There was, again, no character development. He's just a big kid who hits 1 of 5 shots. That's all you need to know about him. There's no, I mean, Charlie was Pacey.
Yeah. By the way, real fast about Fulton. He is the Kelly Leak Bad News Bears reference for all you non-baseball people. He's the Kelly Leak without the allure 100%. And the, you like Kelly Leak. You either love him or you fucking hate him. Right. I like Kelly Leak. Because he's that guy smoking cigarettes, riding a dirt bike, trying to bang Tatum O'Neal.
Yes, he was that character.
100%. But without any of that story or any of that kind of allure, zero.
Right, without any type of interest. And when they first introduced him, I was like, all right, this is going to be interesting. There'll be something to him. And then there just wasn't. And it almost was like you robbed the character of a moment because you couldn't write. The scene where the kids are in detention and they're writing something out, did either of you ever actually have to write something out on the chalkboard?
Yes, yeah, I did.
Did you?
I did. Yes.
Oh, wow. You did, Gutsy?
Yeah, I did.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. My wife and I looked at each other and we were like, I've never known anybody who.
That's because you're in the band and you never got in trouble, you big pussy.
Oh, I was in. Trust me, I was in detention. and the whole, and then it like the end, it gets unrealistically aggressive. Your coach, what's the bad coach's name?
Lane Smith is an actress, yeah.
Where Coach Smith is like, get out there and finish him. It's like, all right, I get you have a problem with the guy, and you're pissed off about the kid. That would never, ever happen.
Like, coaches wouldn't tell kids to cheat and flop and all that shit either, and they're certainly not going to say, go hurt that kid.
Have you never met Bill Belichick's kid? I think so.
He might be an exception.
I was able to swallow the cheating a little more than I was the fucking eliminate the kid. Sweep the leg, Johnny. Like, go fuck yourself. It's peewee hockey, goddammit. Oh, and there's the scene where they show the newspaper picture of Estevez and the other coach, and they're like in the dark faded. It's like it's a fucking peewee game. Who's what? What sports illustrator photographer came out to do
that? That was a Rocky Balboa Apollo Creed shot.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. The whole movie was so asinine. That Lane Smith is in competition for the meanest coach with Bud Kilmer from Varsity Blues.
Oh,
and that's two episodes that referenced Varsity Blues.
That's good.
And I get it. And it's true that there are parents out there that take these sports way too seriously. Mm-hmm. But it just was, it went so far over the top and it felt unnecessary. And it's hard for me to say, well, like, how would I have felt if I saw this when I was 11? But the movie was, the writing was terrible. It was lazy. It was ridiculous. The hockey, I'm not a huge hockey fan, so that just never occurred to me. The one thing that did occur to me, and Kev referenced it in his in the shopping spree, they were on rollerblades.
Yeah.
How would you ever let 12 kids roll rollerblades through a mall? Like that?
You don't.
That would never, ever happen. And it did remind me of one thing. I used to rollerblade a lot. And I loved rollerblading. And then one day, somebody somewhere said, you know what? Rollerblading's kind of gay. And we were all like, well, we're not rollerblading anymore. Fuck this.
Ain't that the truth? Just don't listen. But in Miami, it very much is still prevalent down
there. Is
it
still a thing?
I was just a year and a half ago. I'm very surprised that
it doesn't make a sense. I actually played roller hockey. I used to rollerblade all the time. We would like set up jumps and shit. Like it was a lot of fun. And then one day, it was literally, that shows how homophobic our society is. Yeah. Like a couple of gay guys rode their rollerblades one day and everybody was like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't do that anymore. And an entire industry died. And
I will say though, hockey culture in Michigan at the time, even now, I live in Florida and in South Florida, and there's a decent hockey culture here as well. And for those that don't play ice, there is, like, roller hockey is still a thing.
Were you in South Florida?
I played it all the time as well. So, like, I know a lot of guys that did both. So I'm okay with that idea. The idea that these kids would rollerblade outside of the ice, because playing ice hockey is expensive. Ice time is expensive. They even address that in the film.
Yeah.
So kids rollerblading outside of the rink makes sense. But to your point, though, it is very cheesy. It's corny. Kids then, in the 90s and even now, no one's rollerblading through goddamn malls.
No.
No, that shit's ridiculous.
So,
Where are you from? Sorry, where are you from in Florida? South Florida?
I live in around the Fort Lauderdale area now.
My wife's from Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So, yeah. I mean, look, I could go on. I took a ton of notes, a lot of which Kevin addressed so eloquently. For me, this movie was just not good and I couldn't see it through the eyes of a kid. It's definitely not, my wife is 8 years younger than me and she got super excited about this because this was right in her age wheelhouse and we watched it and she was like laughing and like saying the lines before they happened. And I was just like, this is fucking terrible. Like you're not even
laughing, laughing. Where are the funny parts in this?
She's a simple girl.
she married you.
Yeah, easily conned. But she loved this movie. And I was like, you can't even take a step back and just look at it as just a movie and realize that this is a horrible movie. Oh, and one last thing that I wanted to note, and this falls into an interesting fact. In the 90s, it was very big, if you watch a lot of different 90s movies, to overlight the actors by their head. And it gave them this, it was called like the halo effect. And all of the actors in this movie had that, and Estevez especially, constantly had the head glow. And if you ever watch the remake of Miracle on 34th Street, everyone has the head glow. And I looked it up a while back, and it was just something they thought that would make the character, like you would know that was the main character because they were glowing. And it looks so ridiculous in this movie because it stood out so badly. But yeah, for me, this wasn't good. I didn't like it. I don't think I hated it quite as much as you two. I'd probably give it like a 4. I mean, I'll never watch it again. And yeah, It was just as a kid's movie goes, it wasn't even a good kid's movie.
Did Ashley feel the same way she did after rewatching it as she did when she was a kid?
She still loved it.
Really? She couldn't. She couldn't even say, you know what? I get why people don't like it, I love it, but I get why people shit on this. It's not good. Is she still dying on the hill for this film?
I paused right after the pirouette scene, and I just stared at her, and I was like, somebody wrote that in a script. It went through a whole approval process. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. And you think this is an okay movie? And she's like, it's just silly. And I was like, That's not an excuse.
I can take silliness with Ace Ventura, but with sports, I fucking better be goddamn I's dotted and T's crossed. Especially the kids. Yeah.
And that was the only other time we saw her is when she first came onto the team. We saw her twice in the film. It's so stupid.
By the way, JD, with the mic covering your face, you look exactly like Dimitri Martin. How many times have people ever told you that?
Never.
I'm an originator, goddammit, so it pleases me to be the first. But before we get to that, let's get into now some critics five-star reviews.
Critics five-star reviews. Critics five-star reviews. Critics five-star reviews.
There are some parts that feel very 90s family entertainment, but I really don't mind because it's executed so well.
Okay.
A pleasing and entertaining sports film and one that can be appreciated by a wider audience thanks to its solid writing. I couldn't even say it without laughing. Thanks to its solid writing and strong performances.
Wow.
A decent enough kids picture. What is this, 1955 picture? With some laughs and the always required sports element, heart. So good call by JD with that one. Mm-hmm. While nicely layered with tough, conflicting personal questions, really tough, ducks off ultimately flaps into easy outcomes and pat contrivances. Still, it's an overall charmer, and director Stephen Herrick keeps it flying with a nifty mix of slapstick and action. Now, those reviews are not all that glowing. We can all agree on that. No one's dying on the hill for the Mighty Ducks, right? Other films are like, fuck you, this is great. No one's like, yeah, this is all like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Critics,
one-star reviews. Critics, one-star reviews.
Stephen Brill, who has a small role in the film, constructed the screenplay, much as one would put together some of those particle board bookcases from IKEA.
Yeah, that makes sense.
By the way, I also this film did do us a solid. Thankfully, this Mighty Ducks film did not incorporate the annoying, awful Minnesota accent. Thank you for not subjecting us to that.
That would have been unwatchable.
Don't you know, huh?
Yeah.
Those not yet wise to formulaic pablum. Oh, we got a wise one on our hands, Kevin Israel. You knew I'd find one who'd try and execute his master's in English lit. His formulaic pablum are likely to enjoy this ice hockey kiddie ensemble comedy. Excuse me. But their older escorts, what is this, fucking Heidi Fleiss writing this one? Their older escorts might want to bring a novel and a flashlight or a Walkman or portable television with earphones. Did the VCR not fit into that equation as well? The script by Stephen Brill is pure formula and totally predictable. He takes absolutely no chances.
Nope.
Second best review, I can understand why these unknown child actors were involved with this movie, but as for the grown-ups, all I can figure is that they were each fulfilling some kind of community service obligation.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And my favorite one. I chose to work as a cashier at a gas station over being an extra in this. I chose wisely.
That's true. Good call.
Filled up $25 on pump four. Wait, shouldn't I be at a call time right now? Nah, fuck it. This is nothing.
That might be the greatest review we've read yet.
That's why I saved it for last. Amazon, five-star reviews. Amazon 5-star review the ooze. It's time for Amazon 5-star reviews, 5-star reviews. This movie is a classic. Show your children. It's okay if they hear words. If the movie is worth the loss of a little innocence. It's funny. After this movie, you'll be a fellow duck quacking away your enemies. And then I think someone will be calling you autistic, most likely.
What words? What words? Were there bad words in this?
Hold on. Ready? Oh, part, second one. Though beware, there are a few H-E double hockey sticks. I have to have a conversation with my 4.5-year-old. Great movie. Signed, Ned Flanders. Oakley doakley. People get pissy when if you say hell in kids' films, these fucking middle American people get so clutching their hearts like there's a – like as you said.
That's
oh
why
my.
You can say damn but not goddamn because of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Can't we get past that already? Can't we move – it's 20.
No, we still haven't. They still do it, which blows my mind.
My favorite 5-star review. You ready? Emilio! The Mighty Duck Man. Story of a man drinking and driving and then being at a world-class a-hole to a bunch of kids. Then in an effort to land in the pants of Heidi Kling, decides to be nice to them. Signed, a guy who pounds 4 beers and reviews films. I like how you're Emilio!
Emilio!
The only thing missing was a high five, bro.
I bet he was writing it as the copywriter.
I know. That's what I thought, too. I agree. And last one. Classic. Make number 4 already, but stay true to the story. Use original characters, especially the ones who stayed throughout the film, even if they use a new set of players, smiley face. Signed, every Catholic priest.
Wow.
Amazon 1-star reviews. Amazon 1-star reviews. This is one of the most garbage pieces of cliche trash I've ever seen. Fuck this movie.
Right to the point.
I like it.
My kind of guy or gal. One for the kiddies, as for the adults, good luck. Predictable and bland. Typical kids triumph movie. The theme is so boring now, and I can't believe there are 3 more sequels after this. It's just bullplod. Why do filmmakers do this? It's very infuriating. Bullplod? Who the H-E-double hockey stick says bullplod these days, Kevin Israel?
There were 4 of these?
That's a callback. Fuck you. Okay.
No, I like that to the fact response. That there were 4 of them.
I knew there were 3. I didn't know there were
at least 3.
3, yeah.
Yeah.
I did not, by the way, I did not see the sequels. After the first one being so just, as a kid when I saw this, again, probably saying like it was a C-, D+, I go, meh, I don't care. Never saw the other 2. And I still
The second one is a better film. It's a tighter film, but it's also more absurd in its turning hockey into a circus. So I hate it. I almost hate it worse than the first one.
Oh. Next one. LOL, it was cool with a K when I was young, but not now. LOL. Written by Hunter S. Thompson.
Nice.
My childhood is ruined. I watch this again and realize how truly awful it is. This is a sad day. Mm-hmm. It will always have sentimental value, and the kids are pretty awesome, but I can't no more.
And that's actually indicative of why I'm here, because I feel like a lot of my peers are that person. They just haven't got to the part of rewatching the film.
And, of course, the last one is always my favorite. Not a big fan of the movie, but I am proud to say I have eaten at Mickey's in St. Paul.
Okay. There
you go. I'm glad this guy or gal threw a Yelp review in here.
Yeah.
Kevin Israel, did J.D. Duran gut the sacred cow?
All right. I hate couching this, but I have to. This movie was a 97-year-old heifer that was already about to keel over. So, yes, J.D. managed to end this thing's life. But that said, it wasn't doing good on its own anyway. No. So, JD, congratulations. I think you got this kid, got the cow, but the cow was ripe for the gutting.
I agree. I think, JD, you must have had some fierce Indian food the night before, farted in the cow's face. The cow's heart seized being so angry that you farted in its general direction. Keeled over. You like that? I knew you. Yeah. Keeled over, had a heart attack, and we can put on the death certificate cardio, an MIA, myocardial infarction. So the cow died of a heart attack, but you're right. This thing was on barely life support, and you've just decided to pull the plug like a merciful human being who decided to do so.
Regardless, you get the trophy.
You do get a trophy. I would say, what's our percentage now of people gutting the sacred cow? Are we like, what, 40, 45%?
I don't think it's that high.
No?
I think it's 30. I bet it's 30.
You do. I have to go back and do the math, but it's not. So you've managed to do something that wasn't done often, but it's like, what? I tell you what, this is like winning the World Series trophy in a year shortened by COVID.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Cool analogy.
I was going to say, you guys were a little on the fence for doing this anyway, and that's understandable. I think I talked you into it because I may be wrong, and if so, I'll come back and fully apologize. But I really do believe that there are a lot of people out there that have nostalgia for this film that really love it and will defend it, or at the very least enjoy it and haven't rewatched it in a while.
Two points.
I needed to come on here and really lay out the truth. The best thing this film has going for it is that it has a Stanley Cup behind it. So I guess congrats to them on that. But
yeah, give it up for Paul Kariya and Timu Solani, but not for Emilio Estevez.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe Guy Herbert, Guy Herbert, if you're American. To correct you, no, it did not take much convincing for us to do this fucking film. I knew this was a piece of shit. All right, let's be honest. But it is beloved. I was surprised because I told my brother we were doing this, and my brother is in this wheelhouse. He played hockey too, and he goes, I like this film. I talked to him yesterday about it. He goes, I liked it. I go, watch it again, Brian. We may have a disagreement on this one. But
yeah.
But that is that. JD Duran, tell us again, where can we find you and your podcast and your social media and all that good stuff?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. People can find our work at incessionfilm.com. That's the easiest way to get all the info. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find the show on iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify, basically anywhere you can find podcasts. We have two a week. We have one that comes out on Mondays. And that's been historically a show dedicated to whatever the big release is in a particular week. During COVID times, that's been a challenge, to say the least. And we have a show that comes out on Fridays that typically is dedicated to indie films or those said sacred cows. So we have two different shows depending on what you like there. And again, you can find everything at incessionfilm.com. And thanks again for having me, guys. I love this.
Well, thank you. Now subscribe and listen to every episode, goddamn, if you really love this. Kevin Israel, where can the world find you?
Go to my website, kevinisrael.com. As comedy opens back up, I'll be updating with dates. You can get my album, The Struggle Is Real, on iTunes and everywhere else you download.
KevinGoatee.com. Our gig this week was canceled.
Ooh.
Fucking hell, I was so looking forward to that one, too. KevinGoatee.com for what? I don't know. Listen, NFL season's coming up sooner or later. You'll be getting my hot picks then. Believe that. That's where I was 62% against the spread last year. Again, killing it. Gutting the Sacred Cow, that's what I really want to focus on. Why? Because every single day during the work week, we're doing list of 10. We're doing movie news. We're doing sequels that we wanted to see or movies that we did not want to see. Movie quotes and, of course, movies that we've seen we want to talk about.
And who are we doing it for, Kev?
What's that?
Who are we doing it for?
Everybody who gives a fuck.
We're not doing it for us. We're doing it for the fans.
We are selfless. And what do we ask in return? That you go to guttingthesacredcow.com and get a t-shirt or a mug or a hat. But more importantly, just leave us that 5-star rating, 2-sentence review. And when this damn coronavirus does dissipate, I'm happy to say I've done a little bit of fact digging, Kevin Israel, and we have a ton of people who are dying to see this show live. So
Who wouldn't want to see us live? That makes sense.
You know who? Communists. But we will be doing this. We will be doing a live show as soon as this shit, this Corona nonsense dissipates and we can get out there. We have a ton of people. We have a ton of people in mind I'm going to do for a live show. So, but again, how are you going to know that live show is going to happen? By going to guttingthesacredcow.com and joining our mailing list. So check all that out. Guttingthesacredcow.com, GTSC podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. But we can't thank you enough. All the kind words of encouragement, support, retweets, shares, telling your friends, that's the highest form of a compliment. Telling your friends about this awesome podcast that we think we've got going on is huge. And, of course, we want to thank J.D. Duran, excuse me, for coming on our podcast and successfully gutting the Mighty Ducks on Gutting the Sacred Cow. And we appreciate that. And, yeah, everybody, listen, thanks a lot. Take care. We will see you next time. Later.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.